content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I'm going to be reading to you from the Washington Post. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the Triangle Radio Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Well, when have you ever told someone you're going to visit some place and they responded by saying, "You're going where?" Well, the editors of the Washington Post have turned that response into an occasional column. In fact, it's a monthly series that they say highlights the best vacation destinations you probably never considered. Among these, they say, are Greenville, South Carolina, Boise, Idaho, and Eugene, Oregon. Well, anyway, in the newspaper's August 16, 2018 issue, writer Melanie D.G. Kaplan shared her story about going to Fargo, as she puts it, where a Scandinavian sense ties together a North Dakota community and a city with a lot more to see than snow and that wood chipper. Let's begin. Forget Fargo. Don't get me wrong, I love the Coen brothers' dark crime comedy, but 22 years later, if you're still thinking about the movie, when you hear the word, it's time to rewire your brain. I'm here to tell you that this North Dakota city is not a godforsaken frozen wasteland of wood chippers. Fargo's a slice of Oz on the eastern edge of the Great Plains, quirky, colorful, and full of surprises. A Scandinavian Jewish lunch counter, a gay men's chorus, a thriving immigrant community, a winter frostival with a mobile sauna, an artsy boutique hotel, Microsoft's third largest campus, and a championship football game. Well, more than that, it's the people of Fargo and Moorhead, Minnesota, its sister city across the river, who have drawn me back multiple times. They all seem to share a remarkable can-do attitude and a collaborative energy. Locals are quick to credit their forebears, the Scandinavian settlers, who depended on each other to raise barns, harvest crops, and recover from floods. That same work ethic, dynamism, and community support help a new generation of makers, entrepreneurs, and artists who dream big and often succeed. The long, frigid winters seem only to bolster Fargoan's industriousness and sense of humor. When I showed up in late June, I ran into a friend before we even had a chance to make plans. Downtown's that small. That afternoon, I heard that drivers get a friendly warning, written warning, before their first parking ticket. Locals are that nice. Well, when you go, chat them up. See the wood chipper at the visitor center if you must, then get to know with it the real Fargo. And she's got some different categories that she's going to use describing this town, and here's some local faves. On autumn Saturdays, take your team spirit to the Fargo Dome, which houses the home football field of the North Dakota State Bison. The Thundering Herd, as the team is known, has won the NCAA Division I football championship tournament, a different animal than the bowl system, six of the past seven seasons. Fargoans bleed yellow and green year-round, and an insider tip, you'll hear chatter about Carson. That's Herd's alumnus and hometown hero Carson Wentz, now in the NFL as a quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles. Tailgating is a sight to behold. It begins at 4 a.m., and you'll find custom-wrapped buses and motorhomes, propane-heated tents, and vans donning bison horns. The Dome seats 19,000 for games and 25,000 for concerts, such as the recent Def Leppard and Journey shows. Across from the Dome, the Fargo Air Museum. I love stepping into places where you momentarily forget what state or country you're in. For utterly surreal, try Sons of Norway Cringin Lodge No. 25, where I felt certain about only one thing when I arrived at 1:28 p.m. Pi Thursday would be over in 2 minutes. The lodge is among the largest in this Nordic heritage fraternal organization, and the building, an old Buick dealership with red carpet and walls, is decorated with Norwegian folk art, Viking carvings, and rosemaling. The last is a traditional painting style made up of scrolls and flowers. Even the dumpster is rosemail. As I ate cherry pie in the dining room, a regular group played bridge and two volunteers chatted about Lukfis. On my way out with a pack of homemade lefse, a potato flatbread, I picked up a newspaper and glanced at club activities open to the public. Norwegian lunches, walleye dinners, folk dancing, rosemaling practice, and weekly live music in the Troll Lounge, which has a 96-foot Merrill and 22 hand-carved trolls. Now, there's some guidebook must that's included. Outside Fargo, it's nearly impossible to mention the city without people commenting on the movie, so hats off to the Fargo-Moorhead Convention and Visitors Bureau for treating visitors to a little Fargo. The CVB displays the screenplay and is a promotional ice scraper, but the main attraction is the original wood chipper with a keg poking out. A friendly woman rushed over from behind her desk holding a flannel hat with ear flaps. "Would you like me to take you your picture in the hat?" "Well, I can pretend to push the foot in," I said. I handed her my camera and posed awkwardly. "Now," she said with a horrified look. While I was there, a mother and daughter from Northern Virginia arrived and announced that North Dakota was their 50th state. The woman excitedly gave them Best for Last Club T-shirts and certificates, and the Virginians told us about their travels. I left the center and spent 36 hours in Fargo without hearing another peep about Fargo. Referring to the movie. Known for its American modernism and regional art, the Plains Art Museum was an early investor in the downtown's nuance and has become a gathering place for the community. Located in a gorgeous turn-of-the-century warehouse that once stored farm machinery, the museum has about 4,000 works in its permanent collection. There's a print studio, performance area, pollinator garden, and space for workshops. One on Native American poetry and art will be held on August 23rd, and that was just this past August. When I visited, I enjoyed a large audio installation, a William Wegman pup, a Warhol screen print of a First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy and David Bradley, Mona Lisa-esque 1990 painting, Powwow Princess in the Process of Acculturation. The museum is free, thanks to members and donors. Some of its other funding comes from what's called charitable gaming, a widely accepted practice in North Dakota that generates millions of dollars in taxes from blackjack and bingo, for example, for a state that offers meager funding to nonprofit organizations. Well, what about what to eat? Well, here's some local faves. In their dining out days, my grandmothers would have loved burn bombs. One collected mid-century modern furniture. The other whipped up Jewish meals and desserts like nobody's business. So I had to smile when I walked into Brett Burneth's Mod House, which was largely taken over by the fabulous lunch counter run by his wife, Andrea Baumgartner. She started making bagels in a corner of the furniture shop in 2016, and soon burn bombs eclipsed the Mod House. Much of Burneth's furniture, such as the pink fiberglass boomerang-shaped bowling alley bench from the 1950s, has become restaurant seating. The Scandinavian, German, and Jewish fare, reflecting the proprietor's heritages, includes potato latkes, knishes with mustard cream fraiche, cheese blintzes with lingonberry sauce, chicken matzo ball soup, and brisket with ramps, schmear, and pickled rhubarb. You'll probably see Baumgartner, who trained at Chez Panisse, cooking on her 1948 four-burner stove below the Shalom sign. Don't miss her occasional themed dinners, which sell out quickly. The owners of Wild Terra Cider and Brewing acknowledged the complete lack of commercial apple orchards in North Dakota, but that didn't stop them from opening Fargo's first cidery in December, and I'm thankful for that. Most of Wild Terra's dozen offerings, which change daily, are from the Pacific Northwest or Michigan. But it does craft some of its own ciders, including the blueberry and banana stargazer, with apples from small local growers. The cidery is in a beautifully restored century-old horse stable. The menu, all vegetarian, includes treats such as Buddha bowl with microgreens and Brussels sprouts with bacon from the herbivorous butcher in Minneapolis. Locals gather for 80s movies upstairs on old-school sofas. A mustard-colored velvet one that has national parks patches. The new co-op is next door. Whew. Now, here's another guidebook must. At Rustica Eatery and Tavern, just across the main avenue bridge in Moorhead, dinner is comfortable and neighborhoody. How you like that word? The more casual seat-yourself tavern has a wood-burning pizza oven and copper beer taps, and the eatery, where I found a spot at the bar, has exposed brick walls, indistinct jazz playing in the background, and a relaxed, classy vibe. Not surprising. surprising for this part of the country, the menu is meat-heavy with rack of lamb and cornmeal-dusted local walleye, but it also features house-made pasta and a board so full of roasted veggies, dips, and towering baguette slices that I needed a doggy bag. That plus a salad was just $9, thanks to a well-attended and hard-to-believe happy hour from 5 to 6 p.m. and 9 to 11 p.m. You'll get half off all starters, soups, salads, pizzas, burgers, mac and cheese, and select beers and wines. No fine print. The first thing I noticed about the cinnamon toast at Youngblood Coffee, it was as thick as a 2x4. Then I saw the tiny lakes of butter pooling in the fresh sourdough, and I knew that if my childhood toast had looked like this, I would have never left home. Youngblood makes its own sourdough, a bargain at $5 per loaf, the same price as avocado toast, and roasts its own coffee beans. As I savored my slice of heaven, Rush played on vinyl atop the morning chatter. Nearby, I noticed a lovely green matcha latte with Instagram-perfect design and the foamed milk. This new location is around the corner from hip Roberts Alley, which has an indoor bike parking lot like nothing I've ever seen. Bike tools, a pump, and gym-style lockers and benches. Now, what about shopping? Well, here's some local faves. If Etsy metamorphosed into a bricks-and-mortar shop, it would look like Unglued. Featuring more than 300 local and regional makers, mostly women, the shop is often bustling. Under twinkly lights and hundreds of origami cranes swooping down from the ceiling, you'll find a jigsaw puzzle of the famed Fargo Theater, a onesie adorned with a loon, the Minnesota state bird, jewelry made from repurposed dishware, zipper pouches featuring hockey skates, and hair pomade from Dakota Beard Oils. Yobo Sweet Shop is in the back. How can you not love the bulk offerings from their green apple army guys, black currant gummy mustaches, and giant sour spiders? If you'd rather try DIY than buy, check out Unglued's classes in leatherworking, ceramics, embroidery, and macrame. For a uniquely Midwestern experience, you head to Shields, a nearly 200,000-square-foot mashup of REI, Dick's Sporting Goods, and Cabela's, with a 12-car Ferris wheel and enough taxidermed animals for a natural history museum. Upon arriving, the world's friendliest cashier greeted me, and cheery welcomes continued as I ambled through the store. I stopped counting at 8. I passed all the expected sportswear and gear, as well as skateboards, pogo sticks, cornhole sets, and bison ties with green and yellow checks. An entire section features merch for Lake Life, locals' ubiquitous weekend activity, with packs of water balloons, kites, and a gun that kills insects with a spray of table salt, all things you could buy cheaper online, but then you'd miss the archery shooting range, golf simulator, and collection of life-size presidents around the store. And then there's the gun department upstairs, supposedly the largest in the state, where I snapped a picture of the youth shotgun section in case I later thought I'd imagined it. And then we have some guidebook must. When I visited in June, Dakota Fine Art was still glowing from its lively grand opening. The 9 prominent local and regional artists who own and run the gallery had reason to celebrate. The space is filled with stunning pieces that reflect Great Plains landscape and culture. Steve Reblin, a furniture maker and one of the founding artists, had brought in his $3,750 Champcha Root coffee table that morning. It weighs 500 pounds, he told me, and I got it here myself. Among the lighter-weight pieces is a playful series by photographer Meg Spielman-Peldo featuring Corso, the rehabilitated bison, who has become the NDSU mascot. Water Buffalo shows him at a swimming pool, and Bison Elevator captures Corso in front of a grain elevator. And by the way, Nicole's Fine Pastry next door has dreamy traditional desserts and Scandinavian treats such as crumb cake and kranzakaka. Well, just as I've begun to tire of homogenous retail boutiques that have a little bit of everything, Anthropology mini-me's with well-made dresses, handcrafted home goods, tasseled pillows, and sustainable soap, I came across others. The shop may look like similar boutiques with its beautiful products and minimalist decor, but founder Laura Morris has raised the bar by donating all store profits to education, social, health, and job creation. Morris, a pharmacist and Fargo native, opened the shop 4 years ago and has never taken an other's paycheck. With each purchase, shoppers support vulnerable populations around the globe. Wooden spoons and bowls help fund employment programs for sex trafficking survivors. Hoop earrings made from recycled glass help jewelry makers grow their businesses. Each set of sunglasses sold yields a free eye exam and glasses for someone in need. Every BOGO brush sale means a toothbrush giveaway. This month, Others expects to reach the $250,000 mark for donations. Now, that's something to shop about. And how about where to stay? Well, here's a local fave. When I first stayed at the Hotel Donaldson in 2015, I was blown away by the 17 artist-inspired rooms, daily wine and cheese happy hour, rooftop bar, turned-down truffle, and complimentary morning pastries delivered to my room. This is Fargo? Earlier this summer, when my beagle and I planned a rendezvous in town with my friend Margie, I knew exactly where we'd stay. The boutique hotel is conveniently located within walking distance of the river, shops, and restaurants, although you'd eat very well even if you never left the property. Too tired to venture out, Margie and I kicked back in our room and enjoyed a hodo flatbread with garden-fresh tomatoes and basil, along with fare we'd picked up from Vinyl Taco across the street. One taco was particularly spicy, and Margie, who grew up nearby, said, "Ufta!" A Norwegian exclamation of surprise that I'd seen on T-shirts and mugs. And rooms there, by the way, start at $184 per night. And here's a guidebook must. Stepping into the Element by Westin in West Fargo feels a bit like checking into an eco-friendly spa with its modern and minimalist decor, sunlit rooms, and greenery at every turn. The pet-friendly hotel has priority parking for fuel-efficient vehicles, a Tesla charging station, free self-service laundry, a nice-sized gym, and pool and complimentary shuttles to the airport and downtown. Most of the 130 rooms have a full kitchen. Borrow one of the Element's free bikes to pedal to dinner at the Blarney Stone Pub or walk next door to True Blue Social Club. Studios start at $129 per night, including breakfast. How about what to explore? Well, local fave, here's a fun fact. The Red River flows north. Yep. This slow-moving waterway meanders 550 miles from the Breckenridge, Minnesota area up to Lake Winnipeg in Manitoba, and most of those miles form the border between North Dakota and Minnesota. From downtown, walk across Veterans Memorial Bridge, where you'll find signage with more trivia. The Red River Valley is one of the flattest landscapes on Earth, for example. Stroll north along the tree-lined river to nearby Jumcoast Center, home to a replica Viking ship. You can rent kayaks there or further south at Lindenwood Park on the Fargo side, which also rents bikes and has a cool pedestrian bridge to Gooseberry Mountain Park in Moorhead. Check it out. The bridge lifts when the river level rises. To retire by the Red at the day's end, you can head to the Lindenwood Campground, where tent sites are just $30 a day. Well, here's a guidebook must on places to stay. Just across the river, the Red River, Moorhead is often overlooked by visitors. Granted, the high school's mascot is the Spud, and the only unanimous recommendation I received from locals was to visit the Dairy Queen, where the Dilly Bar was supposedly invented. But even though Moorhead is a couple of decades behind Fargo in downtown development, there are an increasing number of reasons to visit this side of the Red. Don't miss Blue Stem Center for the Arts, a fantastic amphitheater venue. Joan Jett, Cheap Trick, and the Avett Brothers are still on deck this season. Get your zen on during free yoga on the Comstock House lawn, and get your drinks at Junkyard Brewing, which feels like a college party with nightly live music. I caught the Crop Dusters. There's free popcorn, a taco truck, and unexpected, always changing libations such as stout with peanuts, and an experimental strawberry sour. And by the way, Melanie D.G. Kaplan, our writer, is a freelance writer. She's based in Washington, D.C., and her website is melaniedgkaplan.com if you want to read some more from her. Her website is melaniedgkaplan.com. Wow. Well, in the August 9, 2018 issue of the Washington Post, writer Walter Nicklin is going to tell us about trying on a farmhouse in northern Italy for size, another little eclectic journey. His article also reveals how a swap, rather, can provide a rather unique travel experience. And are you ready? Framed by a mountainous horizon, the farm fields are littered with hay bales, both round and rectangular. And I'm reminded of the Virginia Piedmont, where I grew up. Such a gentle pastoral landscape seemed imprinted in my spiritual DNA, and the real reason I've journeyed here to northern Italy's Piemonte region to discover whether the two places have more than similar names in common. The shared name means from the Latin root foot of the mountains. For the Virginia Piedmont, the mountains are the Blue Ridge. For the Piemonte, they are much taller, less eroded, and therefore younger Alps, which on this hazy afternoon at this distance could even be mistaken for a chain in the Appalachians. As my wife Pat and I settle into the first of 7 days in our very own Cascina a Corte, I'm tempted to conclude that whimsy, such as seeking connections between the two, leads to the very best travel destinations. The original Italian farmhouse with a courtyard belongs to my newest friend Massimo, located in the countryside near the town of Valenza in the Piemontese Monferrata region. It has been in his family for more than two centuries, since he works and lives with his family in Milan, about an hour away by train or car. The Cascina now serves as a second home. Strange as it may sound, it is, though, my own second home in Maine's mid-coast region that Massimo's Cascina now felt so comfortably familiar. He and I first met several months ago through an online community, homeexchange.com, in which homeowners can arrange to swap dwellings on a temporary basis. As part of what has become known as the sharing economy, it's different from a hotel or even Airbnb in a fundamental way. It's your house for mine. Perhaps even more important than the barter aspect is the qualitative difference that you're going, rather that you're getting not only a place to stay, but also the opportunity to try on another lifestyle. In a foreigner's kitchen, cooking with their pots and pans, you have inexorably gone native. So when the capricious notion to use my Virginia Piedmont roots as an excuse to travel to the Italian Piemonte first hit, I immediately clicked on a home exchange search. Of the several Northern Italian properties that interested me, Massimo stood out. The trick was to interest him in my rustic main cabin, an ocean away. As the home exchange platform facilitates direct messages between its members, it was easy for Massimo and me to volley questions and answers back and forth over the course of several days. But closing the sale required a more personal touch, so Massimo proposed a Skype conversation one Saturday from his kitchen to mine. With him was his wife, Simone, and one of his two sons, Patton, and we were joined by our dog, Angel, who didn't seem to notice that their cat, Mina, occasionally appeared on the computer screen. We must have chatted for at least a half hour, our talk ranging from practical details about the proposed house swap to our personal and professional histories to recommended reading, novelist Cesare Pavese for Understanding the Land and People of the Piemonte. By the time we said arrivederci, it felt as if we were dear old friends. Well, fast friends is the next segment. On the day Pat and I arrive at the Cascina, weeks later, this online friendship is reaffirmed by Massimo's warm welcome. He takes the day off from work to show us around not only the house itself, but also the surrounding environs, including an in-depth history tour and where to find the best gelato. Massimo's charming, heavily accented English more than compensates for his American guest's lack of Italian. Still, I wonder if I understand him correctly when, upon opening his well-stocked wine cellar, he expresses the hope that we will help ourselves. That night, as dinner guests at the nearby home of Massimo's in-laws, Margherita and Gennetto, Pat and I are treated to a memorable introduction to Piemontese cuisine. Just hours earlier, the antipasto's multitude of vegetables had been gathered from their garden. The next morning, Pat and I awake to a combination of birdsong from the open window and the purring of Mina the cat nestled on the comforter at the foot of the bed. As we make breakfast from the yogurt, fruit, and mousseline that Massimo has thoughtfully left for us, we reread his five typewritten pages highlighting nearby attractions. The daunting number and range of enticing places to visit is such that the easiest thing to do this very first day is simply to settle in and enjoy the country house, its garden and farm fields, and the views all around it. We leave the Cascina only once that day to go grocery shopping at the village market. Over the next week, we use Massimo's bicycles to explore the Monferrato countryside and our rental car to venture as far as the Maritime and Ligurian Alps to the southwest. Wherever we go, I'm struck how the landscape, so similar to my native Virginia, is also profoundly different. It's all about the way the land is used. The mostly agriculture Piemonte has not surrendered much ground to residential or commercial sprawl. Even the farmers themselves seldom have houses on the farmland. Instead, they live in the quaint villages to punctuate the pastoral landscape. Veering all the multicolored fields of wheat, fruit trees, corn, vineyards, even rice, unlike typical U.S. monoculture, makes it easy to understand why Piemonte is the birthplace of the slow food movement. Founded in 1986 by forerunner Arcicola, in reaction to a McDonald's opening near the Spanish Steps in Rome, the now global Slow Food, established 1989, is headquartered in the Piemontese Bra. Agritourism venues to promote local foods and traditional gastronomy, including places to hunt truffles in the fall, abound in the Piemonte. But slow food also can mean slow traffic, as Pat and I often find our car stuck behind a tractor on the narrow country roads. The vineyards of the Monferrato and the Langhe Guerrero areas of Piemonte have been designated as UNESCO World Heritage Sites, meaning that the organization calls the cultural landscapes of these special places worthy of preservation, where humans interact with the natural environment in harmonious, sustainable, and aesthetically pleasing ways. The best-known, justly praised wines here include Barolo and Barbaresco, sometimes compared to drinking velvet, made from the Nebbiolo grape. A few daring Virginia vineyards are now planting that grape, which would no doubt have pleased American wine pioneer and fellow Piedmont Virginian Thomas Jefferson. While serving as ambassador to France, the future third president made an inquisitive trip to Piemonte in the spring of 1787. Walk Like an Italian is our next section. To burn calories from the local cuisine, heavy on the wine and pasta, Pat and I make sure each day's excursion includes lots of walking. The most strenuous exercise entails hiking to the top of one of the 9 Sacromonte Sacred Mountains, also recognized as a World Heritage Site by the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization for their powerful admixture of landscape art history. These small, erosion-resistant mountains, standing conspicuously above their surroundings, are called monadnocks, or Inselbergs by geologists. Years ago, I built a small stone cabin on top of one of the Virginia Piedmont, although my professed motivation was secular. A commanding view of the surrounding countryside, I can't discount subconscious spiritual yearning. As Pat and I climbed the tree-lined uphill switchbacks of the Sacromonte di Crea, we stop at each chapel or sanctuary along the way, as much to catch our breath as to admire the architecture and artwork from the 16th and 17th centuries. Inside each are wall paintings and statuary commemorating the Christian faith's foundational stories from the Nativity to the Last Supper. Atop the mountain is the Cappella del Paradiso, or Paradise Chapel. For our last dinner in Italy, Pat and I get lost driving to a seemingly remote restaurant recommended by Massimo for its food in the Piemontese tradition. Once there, however, we quickly forget our frustration with the Google Map lady. The tasting menu includes Tomono cheese with honey and hazelnuts, a first course of Angliati, a main course of veal shank prepared with amis and panna cotta and pansy for dessert. What perhaps makes Piemonte seem most like home comes the next morning when we are preparing to leave the Cascina. Unlike a hotel or Airbnb, there is no maid or cleaning service, doing the dishes, putting things back in their place, emptying the trash. The time-consuming, oh-so-familiar chores are not so different from those back home. Besides the simple courtesy of leaving things the way we found them, we have the practical incentive of knowing Massimo and his family will be visiting our place soon. And I'm already feeling guilty. Instead of a wine cellar under my rustic main cabin, Massimo may find a porcupine or a skunk. And my friend, that brings us to the end of today's episode of Armchair Traveler. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be listening next time with us. I'm Mike Edwards. I've been reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, reminding you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, direct them please to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.